This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Well, thank you all for being here. I appreciate it. We introduced a legislative package of bills this week dealing with the Keystone XL pipeline, which will be built through the state of South Dakota. These bills deal with a funding mechanism to cover extraordinary costs that may happen because of the build, and then also dealing with riots and riot-boosting activities. So what these packages do is make sure that we're going after those who commit violent acts in the state of South Dakota during the build, and also those who would fund those types of activities. The other package will make sure that we have a funding mechanism where people can contribute to the Peace Fund to help cover any extraordinary law enforcement costs that we may see coming forward. We've been grateful to see support through the legislative process. These bills have been open for debate all week long, and I think the appropriations committees and hearings have gone well, and now they're being debated on the House floor as well. Just to reiterate, these bills will facilitate free speech. They will facilitate peaceful assembly and peaceful protests. They will not tolerate rioting. And that is why we're bringing them before you today. I also want to touch on the industrial hemp legislation that's coming forward, because it was amended on the Senate floor this week, and the amendment dramatically changed the bill. I believe this whole conversation has changed from being about farmers to being about the CBD industry. And the amendment will legalize CBD oil in the state of South Dakota. It will also make sure that it is legal until FDA takes action to make it illegal, which is not at all how FDA functions or even moves forward in dealing with medicines and drugs that it has to authorize going forward in the country. So this is a concern that I have. I know that it will continue to be working through the legislative process, but just know that this bill has dramatically changed, and it was amended to remove a fee so that it could pass on a majority vote in the Senate. We'll go back to the House for more discussion. I remain concerned, and I also recognize and want folks in the state to recognize that this conversation has changed, that now this bill will legalize CBD oil in the state of South Dakota, and that is a big difference than what we saw in previous pieces of legislation dealing with industrial hemp. I will take any questions you may have.
Governor Noem, this is Kara Hart with the Red River Farm Network.
Hi, Kara.
Thank you for taking my question. I wanted to follow up on the industrial hemp discussion. Mm-hmm. You said now the bill has changed, the language has changed. So my question to you is, has your stance on vetoing or not vetoing the bill changed?
I have long had concerns about this legislation. I have felt that we needed to see federal guidelines from USDA on how we produce industrial hemp in the state of South Dakota. And now that this legislation as well legalizes CBD oil in the state of South Dakota, that adds another concern, because I've long said that we don't have FDA approval for CBD oil, and we don't necessarily know that it is a product that can be used safely. That has been something I've expressed multiple times and continue to share those concerns going forward. I know the House will be voting on this bill coming forward, and I'll continue to weigh in with them and ask them to wait.
So you're not giving an answer, just to clarify, either way, whether or not you will veto the bill if it comes across your desk.
We're continuing to speak to legislators about the vote that they will take upcoming in the House.
Related to that, does the inclusion of the CBD ultimately change what the USDA Farm Bill approved?
Does it ultimately change what?
The intent of the Farm Bill that was approved?
You know, what happened, the language in the Farm Bill said specifically that states could have this debate. And I think that's been talked about quite a bit during this legislative session as well. That did not put a stamp of approval on industrial hemp. What it did is say that it was now for the states to decide if they wanted to set up an industrial hemp program in the state. That is what South Dakota is doing today. And I have expressed my concerns about growing industrial hemp because of law enforcement concerns, which have not been addressed throughout the session, because of the costs to the taxpayers of setting up a program and then dealing with complications that law enforcement will have going forward, determining the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. And then now that we have legalized CBD oil in the legislation, that certainly is a prerogative of the legislature, but not something that I'm supportive of. So it adds another complication and anchor to the bill that I believe is detrimental to our state.
Could you point to the section in that bill? I don't remember seeing that. And also, I know that you wanted to see some amendments from your office get added to that hemp bill. I thought that's what was added on in the Senate, but I could be mistaken.
We had an amendment that was never offered, but we did have one that we did give to some legislators for consideration. It was never offered or debated throughout the process. This was a completely different amendment, which never had my support, and the amendment was very long. So we can get you a copy of that and specifically show you the language that legalizes CBD oil. What it says is that it is legal in the state of South Dakota until the FDA takes action to deem it illegal and not approved, which is not at all how the FDA operates. What they do is they look at a drug or a medication and then decide if they're going to legalize it and give it their approval for use throughout the United States. So the confusion in that amendment and the lack of understanding for how FDA operates should cause everyone big concern.
And I guess moving on to some of the kind of the pipeline bills. Do you know if local and state law enforcement officials have met with or are undergoing training with federal agencies like Homeland Security and the FBI?
There have been many communications. In fact, even under Governor Dennis Dugard's administration, and I referenced this previously, that they've conducted over 6,000 hours of communications and preparations for building the Keystone XL pipeline through the state of South Dakota. So a lot of time and effort has been invested in making sure that we're doing this in a responsible manner. So that includes talking with folks in North Dakota, those who are on the ground, to learn from what went wrong up there and what we could do better in a more efficient manner, but also communicating with local counties, local law enforcement officials, those that will be impacted, community leaders, and then obviously with legislators throughout the session. So many discussions have been had, and ever since I won the election, was brought in to discussions with Governor Dugard's administration, and then obviously have been governor for 2 months, and we've been working on these bills to make sure we're facilitating an approach that is peaceful, that has a funding mechanism to make sure we're covering costs and to make sure that people have the right for free speech and peaceful protests.
Exactly how, what mechanisms are in place to ensure that protest and riot don't become conflated?
That we have clearly defined that we will be going after those that engage in violent activities and rioting, which has been defined in state statute for many, many years. I believe it's been defined since the 1930s. We are not criminalizing any new activities, which I think is a very important point to make. What we are doing is saying that we will be going after those who seek to do harm, but those who come and peacefully protest will have their free speech, their freedom of assembly rights honored in the state of South Dakota.
Opponents of Senate Bills 189 and 190 have raised some concerns about the timing of them coming forward in the last week of session. Can you reflect on those concerns?
You know, we've had conversations with legislators throughout session. I've spoken to many of them that we were talking with local law enforcement officers. Counties have had other legislative bills addressing this bill and how it would happen. We've been talking to legislative leaders in weekly meetings about the fact that we need to be prepared for this, and that we'll continue to discuss with them how we're going forward. So what we wanted to make sure is that we brought legislation that was ready, that was right, that did what we wanted it to do, that was well thought out, and was responsible. So that is why you saw us introduce it on Monday, and it laid over for 2 days so people could examine it. They'd have time to come and schedule a trip to Pierre to testify at the hearing. We had a full four-hour committee hearing, which many bills don't get that lengthy of a hearing to give their opinions and discussion back and forth. And now today they're being debated on the Senate floor, which it did pass overwhelmingly with a quite lengthy debate, and now it will be heard in the House as well. So, these legislative leaders, even those who voted against the package certainly knew that we were preparing for this and that we were having conversations with the company, but also with local law enforcement and counties and with our state agencies. The Department of Public Safety has been heavily involved. We've had the entire governor's staff working on this issue to make sure that we were being responsible and preparing for this build and that we didn't end up in a situation like North Dakota did.
Is there a reason why tribes were not included in the list of entities able to pull out of the, be able to, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, are you talking about the funding mechanism?
The peace fund, so if they incur any kind of cost.
Well, tribes are sovereign nations. We also, this pipeline will not cross any tribal grounds. When we were talking to those who would be impacted by the peace fund and could potentially be submitting reimbursement costs from that fund, we looked at those that would be eligible, and that would be counties that the pipeline will pass through or political subdivisions that were impacted. That doesn't include our tribes. We certainly know from previous years that tribes have concerns about the pipeline. Some do not support the build, and I understand that, but that's not the conversation we're having here today. I mean, the conversation is the pipeline's coming, and we need to be prepared for it. So how do we cover those costs, and how do we make sure that we are safely allowing people to exercise their rights?
In regards to 189, I understand that it's a case-by-case basis, whether it's, say, somebody donates to a GoFundMe if they could end up being litigated against, or I don't know if you give gas money, something like that. And I know your legal counsel has said that that'd be a case-by-case basis and they can't answer to hypotheticals. The ACLU has said that even the possibility of being able to be brought into court for those sorts of actions chills free speech. Do you have reflections on that?
You know, this bill was well thought out and researched, and we know that it is something that will facilitate free speech and freedom of assembly, and it is something that I'm dedicated to and that I have committed to, and that we also have the flexibility and the options to decide which perpetrators of violence we do go after with legal action. So that is clearly dedicated and focused on those individuals that would violently protest, participate in riots or fund riots, and that's where all focus will remain.
Can you give us an idea right now? I understand the construction is on hold right now. Mm-hmm. In your conversations, have you heard any further updates on when this might begin? Will it be an issue this summer or...
You know, we haven't, we're at the mercy of the court and when the injunction would be lifted to see when it could go forward. We do know that construction has more than likely been delayed than what the previous estimates would have been because of that injunction that has stopped the ability to prepare, lay out supplies, get the site ready for construction. So we do know that there is potential yet for the build to happen in the 2019 summer and fall season, but it all depends on what the court action will be in the future.
Is it conceivable that maybe money from the Peace Fund could be used to go after, I guess, those who fund riot boosting?
No. The Peace Fund extraordinary costs that will be covered are clearly defined in the bill. And then also the Department of Public Safety, the administration, the company, and local counties will all have a seat at the table deciding what fits a reimbursable cost and what could be covered from the dollars that flow into the Peace Fund. So that was pretty clearly defined in the legislation, and then also those folks at the table will have a decision-making process to decide which ones they're going to reimburse and which ones not. You know, I don't know the specific number. I'll have to go back and look, but...
Are you concerned on potential litigation coming forward on Senate Bill 189?
You know, we have took all of that into consideration throughout the drafting process, which is one of the reasons that we made sure we did it right. We really do believe that this is good legislation, and it's legislation that could be utilized as a model across the nation for how we build infrastructure projects like this in the future.
I have one on
sure.
the tax rate
sure.
Issue. So the House, I guess Hogg House, the Senate bill with their language. The Senate did the same thing. So they're both going to kind of go into conference committee. Has your administration been working with some of those lawmakers behind the scenes, and what might this bill look like?
Well, I don't know, because they have swapped language back and forth, the bill, and the negotiations have changed many times. So we have been in some of those conversations. I, as indicated in my State of the State address and my budget address, have asked them to wait. We do not know that we're going to have new revenue coming in because of online sales tax collections, so I've asked them to wait until we have better data, better numbers, and then we can certainly follow through on the intention of the previous legislature that wanted that rate to ratchet back down. But if we do that too early and we make a decision based on something that never comes to fruition, then we could be making a mistake that leaves us a hole that we'll be back here cutting different budget items that may be very important to providing care for the elderly, education, law enforcement, those types of issues. So the responsible way to approach this is to wait. I know that the legislature is still having that debate, and we'll continue to weigh in with them. All right. Thank you.